Hello and welcome. You are listening to Moodily Matters, the podcast that recognizes that your mood matters. Every episode, we talk to a range of amazing guests with experience in some of the top organizations in the world, discussing work life at the crossroads of mood, well-being, and performance. Together, we aim to create better workplaces, one mood at a time. Let's get started with your host, Moodily founder, Erica First.
Hello, and thank you for being with us. I am Erica First, your host of Moodily Matters. In today's episode, I'm joined by Rula Alamad. I invited Rula on today because she is a wife, mother, and a first-time entrepreneur after having a 25-year successful career in media. She'll be sharing about the challenges she faces every day in making that shift. And she answers the question that's on everybody's mind. Is Condé Nast really as it seems in the movies? Now on to the episode.
Okay. So good morning, Rula, and thank you so much for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Could you start off by telling us a little bit about your professional journey and what led you to what you're doing today?
Sure. I worked for 25 years in sales and magazines in the publishing industry. And I worked sometime in New York for 5 years. And then for the past 20 years, I've been working in Europe. And for the past 16 years, working for Condé Nast, for the US titles, for all of the US brands, and managing the European business for some of those brands. So in last year, during the pandemic, I decided to start my own company and work still in media, but with a very different set of brands, like working with niche brands that have like a unique point of view, and brands that would not be able to bring on somebody with like me, you know, so with my experience, but they're brands that really need that, you know, they maybe have a founder that, you know, has started the magazine or started the website, but they don't have the experience of how to sell ads, or they don't have the relationships with the luxury brands. So I can work with them and help them build up their luxury business.
So you're sort of at the bridge in between the major fashion companies and media titles.
Yes, and I'm a bridge, exactly that word, as well as sort of like, I also help these little brands kind of create programs and even editorials that the luxury brands might want to tell a story, or, you know, a particular, you know, collection that they're launching, or an aspect of their company that is not being talked about that they want to communicate. So that is like a really cool and creative aspect of the work that I'm doing now that I did not really do before.
Okay, so I have to ask you the obvious question, because you work with luxury fashion houses and you worked at Condé Nast. Is it like we see in the movies?
The Condé Nast part? It's very similar to some of the movies that you maybe you're thinking about. I think it's similar in the, you know, there's certainly a lot of pressure. There's certainly... the idea that, you know, these Condé Nast is at the top of its game, right? The brands are leaders in every category. And you get to that just by being always on, being, you know, always on top of your game, knowing all of the, you know, knowing your category, knowing the industry. So that obviously comes with a lot of pressure. There's also, you know, a certain aesthetic look that, you know, that you need to have in order to represent these brands. And so there is like pressure in that sense. You know, some of it is true for sure.
And so you said you just started your own company. And how do the, like, the dynamics of doing what you're doing now, which the role is similar, but obviously working for Condé Nast and working as an entrepreneur is very different. So how has that changed? Like the stressors that you find, the work dynamics, what's different, what's better?
Although there is, you know, that pressure of working for a big company like that, there is also a lot of positive sides, obviously, and that I miss sometimes now with my company. Some of the stress I think that I have now derives from, not having colleagues. You know, I don't have that office experience. And I'm realizing that that is really important, you know, to just step away from your desk, go and chit chat with somebody. You kind of compare notes as well. Like if you're having a bad day with a bad client or something, then you can always vent with somebody and you can get their thoughts about how they dealt with a similar situation. So that is missing. And so, it doesn't cause stress, but I'm not able to diffuse stress as much as I used to. So I think that would be for maybe the biggest thing right now.
The absence of community of people around you.
The absence of community, yes, for sure.
And you said, so you mentioned that like when you were in a bad mood, that you would go and vent there. How did you find that moods changed, not only how you performed back then and today, but also how the dynamics were in the workplace?
Well, you know, if I was having a bad day or I was in a bad mood or something happened that triggered, you know, feelings of, you know, just unsettling, then you could also go and diffuse it and talk to somebody, or you could share. If, on the other hand, somebody else was feeling that way, then you can also learn from their experience, and it kind of like informs how you're going to deal with the situation later on if you encounter it. If now and back then, if it was a situation that you had to deal with somebody who was in a bad mood, or I was in not myself, then that is very difficult because, you know, flow, you know, the work of flow is not as easy. Ideas don't come as easily. You don't find solutions together as easily because you're constantly kind of resisting. I find like when I'm in a stressed mood, I'm like less open. I just want things to happen the way they're supposed to. And when I'm stressed, I'm less open to thinking of another idea, so, or finding another solution. And that means I'm also less open to, you know, hear what these people have to say, or, you know, even their mood, and maybe adapt a little bit my mood. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, no, it super answers my question. And of course, like everything that you're saying intuitively, which I'm sure is not necessarily based in science, but there is scientific evidence that literally demonstrates everything that you've just said, that the creative part of our brains is actually shut off while we're in a bad mood. We're less flexible towards other people. So all of that, it's like we're kind of aware of on an intuitive level, but not necessarily on a conscious level.
Intuitively, I know I would be responding better to this situation if I did not have this constant, like, this stress, you know, that is kind of blocking me. I'm just less creative. I'm less accepting. I'm less everything when I'm, you know, not in a good mood or stressed or have something else going on negative.
And now, right, because it's not just work stress, we also bring our home life into the office, and we bring our office life into our home life as well.
Yes.
So now that you're an entrepreneur and you work on your own, we talked about how mood like impacts in a group setting. How does your mood affect you now that you work for you?
Now that I work for me, I'm the expert. I'm the leader of this thing that I'm doing. And so people look to me for the answer, but this means they're also looking to me constantly, you know, and sometimes I have the feeling that I bit off more than I can chew, because it, sometimes the things all come all together, and I always have to be, you know the answer or know how to be, you know, how to respond to something or have a solution in some way. So sometimes just the work, the amount of work can be stressful. Another thing is maybe because of the pandemic, maybe because I'm working from my home, you have less personal, interpersonal, you know, you don't see the people. I just see them on Zoom or emails or texts. Now it comes from everywhere in Slack, texts, you know, emails. And sometimes the emails can be curt. You know, they can be a little bit, you know, it can be a little bit off-putting because you can't read the expression of the person. You can't talk to them. So that's another stress that you have to, you know, that kind of thing, you have to you work a little bit more, I think, because you have to try interpret what's happening. Also, just going back to not having the office experience, I don't have an occasion to step away and talk about something. I realize more now that kind of changing the landscape or changing the conversation, getting out of my head, really helps with, you know, managing stress and managing my mood.
Right. So there's like, when you take on and become a leader, you actually are taking on a whole other set of stress variables because all eyes are now on you.
Yeah, exactly.
And the buck sort of stops at your desk, which is and when we work in companies, we have the luxury of being able to sort of pass that off somewhere else.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, but I set out to help brands. I mean, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is what I want to do, is help brands that don't have that expertise. And I have it. So I want to help you. So of course I'm in this position where, you know, I have to help you, but that means I also don't get answers. I have no support, you know,
which is interesting on how that ultimately plays out, because once you're the expert, you don't. The thing that I found in transitioning from work to entrepreneur is I was always so excited about the idea of just being my own boss. But then you don't factor in that when you work in a company, at a certain point, you get to unplug. Whereas when you work for yourself, you're working 24/7.
It is. That happens. And working from home, I just can be at my desk the whole time. I don't, you know, I can get up and cook or do something, but I'm at my desk the whole time. So there's definitely that challenge. I really have to be disciplined about just shutting it down, you know, on the weekend or on one of the days of the weekend to kind of limit that overflowing into all of my life. And to also just gain back some space to think about other things, which I know is really important for my well-being.
Right. And it sounds like you've come to this realization, but you might not yet be in a place where you've established a routine or boundaries.
Yes. Yes. I have the realization. I don't have the discipline.
Right. So what are the things that you think, I mean, I think some of them you've already mentioned, but what are the things you think you need to be able to best take care of yourself to make sure that you get to show up sane and healthy every day to do the job you want to do and also help these brands grow?
Well, you know, sometimes motivation is a problem. I think, you know, after the first six, now it's been a year. Okay. So after the first 6 months, I'm like, I did it. I started my company. This is great. And like, do I really have to continue doing this though? You know, like I've demonstrated I can do it, you know? So there's that little bit of like, let's do the next 6 months. And media planning is, you know, not so much now, but it's quite cyclical. There's the, you know, especially for fashion brands, there's the first semester and then there's the second semester. So once I'm done with the first semester, there's like a bit of a lull. You know, you kind of you closed off all of these projects and now, you know, now what? So that lull is like, So it's a bit hard. I found a hard time, you know, getting motivated to restart, to reopen up things and to you know, it's sales. So it's all leads, you know, you're generating leads, you know, calling up people, writing people, you know, connecting, proposing things, coming up with ideas. I mean, it sounds wonderful. It is. I love my job. But, you know, then you're like, and then also it's really helpful to just kind of step away and maybe read some things about the industry, read some things about, you know, just for pleasure, obviously, as well, because it kind of just opens up, I don't know, another area or it, that I found like, you know, very helpful. Another thing would be to look, you know, to not have everything end at the same time, you know, like have some projects or some things that are continuing. So you never have that lull, that complete, like I'm done, you know, I reached this goal, you know, right. And so maybe like having other little goals has also helped me kind of like stay motivated, and having other things that are continuing that you need to finish, you know, so not everything ends at the same time.
Yeah. And that's interesting because actually the way the brain works is the moment that you've achieved, like you set yourself a goal, you achieve that goal. It's like, awesome, vacation. And, yes. And we'll literally yes. check out. And it's like, okay, no, I did that already. I don't need to do it again. So yes. It's helpful to do like you're doing, which is put minor goals in a context yes. of something bigger, like a 5-year plan. And then year one, I want to get here. Year two, I want to get here.
Yes.
So that you get the little dopamine tick from achieving, but you still have some ways to go.
Yes. I realized mid, after launching the company, I realized towards the end of the first 6 months that I was achieving, I was succeeding. And I was beginning to be like, do I really need to continue this? But I realized then what you're saying, what you just said, that I needed to kind of have another goal. Like originally I was just like, I need to get this off the ground and demonstrate to myself I can, you know, this is going to happen. I can do this. Once I achieved that, then I was like, oh wait, that cannot be the only goal. I have to, you know, have something else. Yeah.
Like done closing up shop.
Yeah.
So motivation is obviously something that's a big focus. Now, in terms of well-being, what are the things that you already mentioned that you feel the need for human contact or mm-hmm. some sort of community? How, in a situation, especially when you're a single entrepreneur, how can you, because it sounds like you're still also like investigating the solutions to these questions, what are some ways you think you can find a community when you don't necessarily have one in the immediate space?
What I have done is kind of get in touch with like ex-colleagues, you know, friends, and I'm lucky that I do know a lot of people in the industry. So maybe getting together for coffees and things like that. This has been particularly hard during the pandemic. But when I have had those moments of the just being face-to-face with somebody, that has been, you know, very helpful. There are times that I've also been in like these larger, you know, sales meetings, like these conferences with some of the brands that I work with. And that has been really, first of all, it took me back to what I knew, what I've known for 20 years, you know, working in big companies and just, you know, like exchanging ideas with people. So that has helped. And I want to participate in that whenever I can. I know that whenever they tell me, even if the timing is not right for me, because they're in America and I'm here in Italy, I'm like, yes, I'll do it. I want to do it, you know? And so that, I know that that is something I'm going to try to do more of. I know that also what I mentioned before, like reading and sort of like staying informed about things, but also just reading different things really kind of helps me reset and recharge. My question is, would it help to join communities and conversations, but it's all virtual? Like Is that help as helpful as being in an office? I don't know. I haven't tried that yet.
Well, I know from my experience that there's a lot of like different founder groups, women's founder groups, or like, you know, you can find on Facebook or also just normal communities on the internet. Now there's a community for everything, basically. And I found that when I was first starting out, that those were such a tremendous source of emotional support for situations that I was not at all prepared for. I mean, you don't realize how hard the process is. And I have a total newfound respect for all entrepreneurs, like anyone who dares to take this journey. But I found, and it was weird because sometimes you expect your friends to be really supportive and it's not always the case because they don't understand what you're going through. And so it's not like they do it on purpose to not be there all the time. They just don't know what's going through. But when you do join a community of other founders or other women entrepreneur, there's such a tremendous sense of community there that I actually found strangers that I had just met to be more supportive and closer to me, also just in understanding each other. Than some of the people that I've been closest with for 20 years. So it's surprising, but it is, I find it's a valid tool.
Wow. I'm definitely going to look into that.
But now, so going back to your mental health and well-being, and staying sane in being a mother, being an entrepreneur,
yes,
being at home, just coming out of the pandemic. So very unique moment here. What are the techniques that you've been using to stay good, like to stay in a healthy mental space? You mentioned reading. Do you have any other techniques that you use? And they don't have to be techniques. Like mine is cooking. When I get...
Oh, yes. I was going to say cooking and reading and working out.
Yeah, I don't have that one.
That is one of the hardest ones. But Erica, as the first time I worked out, like after I hadn't worked out for that night, I slept so much better and I noticed my mood different. And now I just keep reminding myself of that day when I don't feel like working out. I just keep reminding myself, Rula, remember how you felt that night and the next day. You felt good, you felt stronger, you know, all of this. So I have to, but I have to remind myself every day, you know, every right. time. I don't work out every day. every time.
And exercise is one of the best ways to improve your mood immediately, actually. So it's definitely something, I mean, I do work out, but it's begrudged. I do the same thing. I'm like, you know, you're going to feel better. So just go do it.
Yes. 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 Like, but literally I have to really remind myself. I work out. So I work out, I cook, I read, and reading is tough too, because you just want to watch Netflix or you want to do the crossword puzzle, you know, or I mean, I want to do the crossword puzzle. So that reading is also, you know, not always, but I have to be like, okay, you know, just finish the book, you know, finish this thing. So that really helps. And then everything's been wonderful, really good. But I had two moments where the work was very stressful and there was like things coming at me from all directions. You know, I reacted in a way that I wasn't, you know, as caring, patient. I was a little, you know, aggressive and a little, and I regretted it after, you know, I did not feel good. And it kind of, after my mood was bad, because then every call I had after that, I was not as confident, you know, I was not as strong and I'm not as open then, you know, because I had made a mistake. I saw that as I had made a mistake. And so I let stress get to me. I was emotional. And I was flawed. I cracked, you know?
Right.
So it affected then how I did other things after, completely unrelated to that meeting. You know, that happened twice. And so I had to kind of take note of that and and find ways that I can not get in that situation again. Or,
but it's kind of interesting because once it starts, it's kind of like a runaway train, right? And you're aware that it's happening, but it's hard to, it's hard to stop because we don't have the experience of stopping it because we're not usually aware. Like we're aware when it's growing, but by the time it hits, it's like, oh, too late now.
Yes. But there are people who don't react like, there's people who are in those situations. I felt unprofessional. I felt like I did, maybe I felt like a man would not have behaved that way. Do you know what I'm saying? Or not have reacted that way.
Right.
You know, like, so I don't know.
Because then you have like this bad mood, like a stressful situation that you get kind of caught up in. And then there's a whole series of like shame and blame that comes afterwards.
Yep.
Right. Which and then causes another series of, it becomes sort of like an endless spiral that takes you down to a very dark place.
Yes. How do you get out of that?
Well, I have some ideas. No, but this is the thing that's interesting is that there is, obviously there are some personalities that tend towards to be more reactionary than others, but there is also a skill of emotional regulation that anyone can learn. It's just a process of recognizing A, what the triggers are, you know, like once you learn, like what are the things that set you off, and developing the habit of recognizing those, but then also being able to say like, there's kind of a tipping point moment where it's like, you even know cognitively that it's about to happen. We usually have a conversations with ourselves. That's like, I don't, there's like someone in there that's like, don't.
Yes.
And you're like, no, I'm going for it. So it's learning it's learning how to give more credence to the don't voice. And then having kind of the skills that you need to turn it off in real time. It is doable. It's something, you know, obviously I've been working on, but it's a common thing that happens to most people is that there's just this like sort of wave that happens and we get to a point and then it's like, all right.
Yeah. That's what happened. So I can think, I understand how, or I've had my own devices of getting out after it happened to sort of correct things. I mean, I had to apologize, but I kind of said, oh, you know, wasn't happy with our conversation. You know, I kind of saved face. I didn't go, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, it wasn't like that, but I know how to get out of after to correct the course, but while it's happening, I guess that is what I think maybe preparing throughout your day and throughout your week by constantly taking care of that, of your well-being, maybe avoids having these moments like where you can't, where it, you know, not you can't control it, but you know, it goes off the rails.
Well, they are inevitable. I mean, obviously our body and our system is designed to respond like that because we're responding to fear. We fear that we're not able to handle that. Like there's a moment of us feeling overwhelmed by something, either emotionally or physically or, you know, work to do. You just feel that sense of being overwhelmed kicks in an automatic response from our body. So it's there on purpose. Just being what I found in my own conversations and my own research is that most people are not conscious of our mood as a factor in these things, you know, or that, yes, I can get out of that. Yes, I can recognize those things. And yes, I can actually train myself to turn that button off and say to the voice that's saying, don't be like, you know what, you're right. And here's the five things that I know to do to calm myself down. And so it's kind of a new thing that I see coming up, which is, you know, obviously why I started working in it. But the more conscious you are of the fact that your mood is a determinant factor and that that process can actually be stopped is already a first step towards fixing it.
Okay.
which is the good news.
Yeah, that is good news. I just have to learn how to do it now.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's the thing, you know, the more we have awareness of how we're feeling, even just consciously being aware of how you're feeling and being consciously aware that there is a domino effect that first I do this, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens, and being like, okay, so at which point here can I sort of like intervene and stop the process is kind of the process, you know, is the new process.
Yes.
Okay. So, well, we kind of talked about it, but I'll just ask you again, like more formally, how does what you need from a well-being standpoint change as an employee to an employer?
Well, there was a point I had somebody helping me, you know, coming on and helping me with some things, like an assistant, junior person that was just beginning in their, you know. And so if I was in a off mood or I was stressed because I had my own work, because now there's somebody else that you have to give work to or tell them what to do. Or originally this person I brought on needed some training as well, which is okay to do. I'm happy to do it when I'm not stressed, when I don't have my own thing, you know, my own, all of that stuff I have to do. So that I noticed was also for me important to kind of, before the person came into my, you know, into my office and my space, you know, which is my home, for me to kind of be a little bit more prepared. So then I had to also prepare for this other person, both the work, but as well as just kind of my person, you know, like my, how I, so that I can interact with them without giving them all of my stress, you know, right, putting onto them a young person who doesn't, you know, is just at their first job. You don't want to like, you know, burden them with all of that. So,
which so is already that. A very mindful leadership position to take, because the leaders do affect their employees.
Absolutely. And so I remember from, you know, just you would often have, you know, there's always talk about the kind of leader that you have, that it trickles down, right? So if at the very, very top, you have like this, you know, like very demanding, pressure, stress, you know, competitive, aggressive, then it kind of like trickles all the way down. You can be the nicest leader possible, but if that's what you're getting, you're going to, at some point, you're going to transmit that as well. So, but as an employee, you could always just, like we were talking about that before, you could just switch off on the weekend. You could just, you know, go off and, you know, just somewhatly, you know, do your own thing. You can leave it behind a little bit because it wasn't you, you know, your, it wasn't your name, it wasn't your work, it wasn't, you know, in the same way.
Yeah. So, okay. So speaking about now also, cause you brought in young people, so I'm going to jump on that. Knowing what you know now and having had the experiences that you had both as an employer and an employee, what are three pieces of concrete advice that you would give to anyone going into your field or into your line of work? Like what's the three things they need to stay sane and healthy?
I think probably listen more and talk less, you know. It is in a way well-being related, because when you're talking, when you're listening, then you're just taking in this information and processing it without immediately, don't feel like you have to say or talk or put your input all the time, you know, because then you also risk not, you know, saying something that or reacting emotionally. So maybe I think that would be something I would advise young people. Always ask questions. I think it always helps. Obviously, you know, not 17 questions, but also if you are the stressed person, you know, and again, I give this advice as somebody who does react emotionally to things. You know, if you're the stressed person, if something is coming at you, don't feel like you have to answer immediately. Also, I hate to say this, but it's like advice that our parents gave us or our teachers. It's like count to 10, but literally just, you know, pause, think about this, let the emotions a little bit calm down so that some thoughts can come through, you know, and then answer.
And that's interesting because that, like you said, the counting to 10 is exactly that when we were talking about the stress reaction, you know, the choice you make to either dive in or don't dive in.
Yes.
That's that 10 seconds.
Yes. Yes. That's what it is. That's what it is. Is like dive or give into it, get carried away by the wave, right, or just, you know, resist. And then as well, I think in a way, like don't maybe behave, treat all of your people, anybody you're talking to at the job, at the office, treat them as if they're a client, you know, even if it's a colleague, treat them with kindness, with respect. And that, I think, feeds back into you, you know, like they treat you that way too, but it has to also begin from you. Like, so this is something I think really important as well is I'm being that I have clients from all sides. I have clients that I'm selling to, but then the magazines I'm working with are also my clients. Before it used to be my boss. My boss is my number one client. But so I am constantly, you know, being very patient, educating, you know, talking kindly. I don't have an infinite amount of patience. So a lot of times, you know, it goes out, you know, I'm done at the end of the day, I'm done. And I'm like snapping at my kids, snapping at my husband. And so I often say, you know, I have to treat also these people around me like clients. And I don't mean that in a kind of cold that way, but like just give them as well that amount of patience and empathy and handholding and care that I give my work, you know, all of the work people. So that would be my advice also for young people.
That's interesting. We do tend to treat our family because they're closest to us, right? They see the evil version. So we can treat them with less formality and conscious respect than we would a client.
Yes. And it's kind of like sad if you think about it, you know, like you've had it when you had to explain to a parent how to use Facebook or how to use an app or something. And you just lose your patience completely. Right. And then I'm like, well, when I'm not like this with my kids, when I'm teaching my kids, when I used to, you know, now they're like teenagers, they don't need me to teach them anything that way anymore. I'm like explaining things, you know, break them down, see if they've understood, you know. So you have to do that also with people who are not understanding something.
Okay. So thank you so much, Rula, for being here with us today. It was lovely to chat with you.
You too. Thank you for having me. And thank you for the advice and the tips. I'll keep it in mind.
Great. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Ciao. Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Moodily Matters. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. And we'll catch you in the next episode of Moodily Matters.